This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. The work stoppage is over and schools are back in operation. So now attention at the Capitol has shifted to the state's budget. The House and Senate are considering versions of a bill during these last few days of the regular session. On last night's episode of the Legislature Today, host Andrea Lanham spoke with Senate Finance Vice Chairman Greg Bozzo and House Finance Minority Vice Chairman Mick Bates to discuss differences and areas where the two chambers agree. Here's an excerpt from that interview.
Following the passage of that teacher pay raise bill, now all eyes are on the budget since the Senate Finance Chair warned of some deep cuts. What's the progress so far in the House and Senate? I'll start with you, Senator.
You know, obviously the budget that we have right now is that which the governor provided to us that we're taking a look at. There are a few little odds and ends, particularly in special revenue accounts, that we're working through the various details. But for the most part, what's on the floor right now is the governor's budget bill. We passed it out last night, read the second time today, and so we're pretty anxious to get the budget bill completed, get it over to the House and let them take it up. And it's the governor's bill as modified. It's obviously got some changes in it as compared to what we received during his State of the State address. It has some cuts in it, but it also has across the board a 5% pay raise for all public employees, save, of course, the regional jails and corrections officers who get a $2,000 pay increase this particular year.
Yeah, some of the calculations have been delayed because of negotiations going on with pay raises, because they flow all the way through the budget. It's not just the teachers and the troopers. It's all state workers that have to be accounted for. So my understanding is that normally we would run the House budget this year, but because of what's been going on, the discussions with downstairs, we're actually going to flip the process. The Senate's going to send this over to us. We've been working on a strike and insert. That's come back off the table. I understand there's an agreement between the House and the Senate for us to pretty much take their budget, insert it into ours, and send it back. So there are changes to that, but we have gone right back to the governor's introduced budget rather than our working document, which was the strike and insert, with some changes to a few line items and the adjustment letter that came yesterday from the governor's office indicating where he was going to make some allocations or changes. So, you know, we're sort of digging our way through this and making sure that everything's covered and taken care of and that we can pay for these pay increases.
So let's talk about some of those losses. I know we've talked about them a little bit before, just about cuts to additional funding with tourism, commerce, measures with fiscal notes in them, like the business inventory tax.
Well, the business and inventory tax obviously isn't. We know that the business and inventory tax is still applicable, and we've got that revenue there, so we really haven't removed anything. It required a constitutional amendment in order to accomplish that, so it's not going to be part of the discussion. But obviously, tourism had a loss. The governor had some anticipated additional expenditures in that particular program, not only tourism, but also in the Department of Commerce. But unfortunately, you know, we've got to live within our means rather than going out and saying, well, you know, the $58 million that the governor identified as additional revenue, we need to take advantage of. We didn't take that position. We've held that $58 million additional revenue is suspicious, and we'll wait and see.
So we've talked a lot about cuts. What about revenue measures? Are we going to see any of that happening over the course of the next few days?
Well, the revenue measures are those which the governor has identified. Obviously, there's a number of other issues that are of concerns, and we've fully funded PEIA. We've taken $21 million and committed to that this current year, so that all of our public employees have assurance that over the course of the next year, we're able to take care of that. But there's not a lot of revenue beyond that which the governor has identified that we're utilizing right now within the general revenue budget.
Now, very quickly, it sounds like the House and the Senate have come to a lot of agreements on this. Do you think that this is going to get done by Saturday?
I believe it could be done by Saturday night. I think it could be done by Saturday afternoon, the way things are looking right now. I'm not seeing that there's going to be the necessity for the huge fights that we've had the last couple of years over this, and certainly that all starts with the governor's revenue estimate. So we have that number to work with and back down from. So I'm optimistic that we may not be here in the early hours of the morning.
That was Legislature Today host Andrea Lanham speaking with Senate Finance Vice Chairman Greg Bozzo and House Finance Minority Vice Chairman Mick Bates. Visit our website, wvpublic.org, to hear or watch the full interview. West Virginia lawmakers are advancing measures aimed at curbing the state's drug crisis, largely following a blueprint drawn by health officials in January. Glynis Board reports.
The House has scheduled further floor consideration on limiting new painkiller prescriptions for patients to supplies of 3, 4, or 7 days of opioids, depending on who writes the prescription. That's intended to help prevent new addictions. The Senate passed the bill last month. This week, the House also unanimously voted to require hospital emergency departments, as well as emergency responders, to report all suspected or confirmed drug overdoses. That bill, already Senate approved, would also require all emergency responders to carry the antidote for opioid overdoses. West Virginia, in 2016, had a state record of 887 fatal overdoses, a rate of 52 per 100,000 residents, the highest in the nation. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Glynis Board in Wheeling.
Highland Hospital announced it's opening a new 95-bed residential treatment program on the former Sugar Grove Naval Base in Pendleton County. Carol Lofton reports the center is scheduled to open in July.
The first phase of the program will focus on an intensive 28-day treatment protocol. Patients entering the program will have already detoxed elsewhere.
And the Medicaid waiver is the game changer.
It is.
That's Pendleton County Senator Isaac Spanagel. In October of 2017, West Virginia Medicaid was granted a waiver to cover addiction treatment services, including residential treatment programs. The residential treatment part of the waiver will take effect July 1, 2018. The Highlands at Sugar Grove opening is scheduled to coincide with that date. While the program will take private insurance as well, more than a third of West Virginians are on Medicaid, and the government insurer covering the treatment is an important piece of the continuum of drug treatment programs that have been missing in West Virginia, according to Highland CEO Cynthia Persily. The initiative will also create about 200 jobs in Pendleton County, ranging from clinicians to housekeeping. The new program is a partnership between Meridian Behavioral Health Systems and the Gersh Academy. For Appalachia Health News, I'm Carol Lofton.
This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:51. Mostly cloudy skies today. A chance of scattered snow showers with highs in the 30s. Chance of snow tonight, 2 to 5 inches of snow possible in higher elevations with lows in the 20s. Scattered snow early tomorrow, becoming partly sunny with highs in the 30s and 40s. Support for the weather forecast is provided by Erie Insurance, putting service first since 1925. Local agents available at erieinsurance.com. And by The Covenant House, presenting Chef's Challenge, featuring 15 chefs at the Clay Center, Tuesday, March 27th at 5:30. Eradicating Hunger and Homelessness. Reservations, wvcovenanthouse.org. Exxon's XTO Energy gained control of a well pad in eastern Ohio this Wednesday morning that's been leaking gas since it exploded nearly 3 weeks ago. The Allegheny Front's Julie Grant reports.
XTO workers lost control at the Schnegg well pad in Powhatan Point on February 15th, causing an explosion and fires. The U.S. EPA estimates that each day the well leaked 100 million cubic feet of natural gas and other substances like brine water poured out. 36 homes within a mile radius were initially evacuated. With news that the leak has been plugged, the final four evacuated families, those who live within a half mile of the pad, returned to their homes Wednesday. J.P. Dutton is a commissioner in Belmont County, where the well is located.
Oh, it's obviously a relief. I think it's a relief for everyone in the community, but I think things been handled so effectively in terms of response. There was confidence that that would get to this point.
XTO worked with local law enforcement and fire officials, as well as state and federal regulators, in efforts to regain control of the well. For the Allegheny Front, I'm Julie Grant.
Ohio Valley farmers are facing some tough decisions about whether to use a controversial herbicide blamed for damaging millions of acres of crops. The spray dicamba is meant to protect soybeans from weeds, but can harm other plants if improperly applied. Nicole Irwin reports that even some farmers trained on proper use of the herbicide say it might not be worth the risk.
Jeff McGrew is in line with about 30 other West Kentucky farmers awaiting certification that they've been trained to apply the herbicide dicamba. The two-hour session explained the Environmental Protection Agency's new restrictions on use of the controversial herbicide. The session left McGrew uncertain about whether to use the spray.
I'm undecided right now, but I'm leaning towards not spraying it. I don't think in our area we're going to have much of any place that there will be enough area that we won't have buffer zones or other sensitive crops, and I'm not sure that it's going to work out for us.
EPA requires all users have training before they can legally apply the product. As The Resource reported in September, soybean farmers in the region claim more than 50,000 acres of crops were affected by herbicide misuse in 2017. McGrew is worried about damage at a farm he plans to rent this year.
Part of the ground that we farm is on the river bottoms, right on the edge of the Ohio River, and we're concerned about some drift coming across the river from Illinois, and we have no idea who those people are.
Dicamba label changes require applicators to follow strict guidelines. For example, the herbicide can't be sprayed if the wind is faster than 10 miles per hour and slower than 3 miles per hour. University of Arkansas soybean agronomist Jeremy Ross says the label is nearly impossible to follow.
I think now, you know, we pretty much opened Pandora's box, and I think as rapidly as technology is changing and some of these issues are coming up, and you know, it's going to be difficult to slow down much and not get too far behind.
Ross says the dicamba controversy has larger implications for soybean growers and for several agribiz giants. Dicamba is sold by Monsanto, BASF, Dow DuPont, and intended for use with Monsanto's genetically modified soybeans. The beans, called Extendimax, are designed to grow with a dicamba application.
There's probably fear there that if the beans are still available, there's going to be always be that chance that somebody's going to use some off-target products. To eliminate that issue, then the only option is to pull the technology completely off the market.
Ross says some farmers are planting the Extendimax beans but not spraying dicamba. They are depending on other herbicides, such as Roundup, instead. But many weeds have grown resistant to Roundup.
Weed resistance has been a challenge for farmers, and having dicamba as a solution both for this coming season and beyond is critical, and we continue to hear that feedback from farmers across the U.S.
That's Monsanto product manager Ryan Rubshiko. He says Monsanto has not considered pulling their Xtend soybeans from market, like Ross fears. Instead, he says Monsanto is focusing on training efforts and a digital tool to assist applicators.
We've spent a number of years breeding for this new technology, and so not only from a weed resistance perspective, this provides a new solution, but certainly from a yield component, it speaks to the amount of increase in adoption of this technology for this coming season.
Arkansas has the strongest restrictions so far on dicamba. Ohio, West Virginia, and Kentucky have limited restrictions to those listed on the EPA label. Kentucky-certified commercial applicator John Futrell says the training is helpful, but he will only be spraying dicamba for farmers early in the season, before plants have started to surface from the ground.
Most people are pretty pessimistic with it, and that's kind of where I am. I don't want to take a big risk, you know, a sensitive area and end up losing my insurance or something like that. It's not worth it to me.
Soybean farmer Jeff McGrew says the weeds aren't bad enough for him to take the risk either.
After seeing the training today and realizing how much drift problems we could have, that's a huge problem with me. I don't want to have to buy somebody's bean crop out of my pocket.
In the meantime, he says he'll use other herbicides and look at implementing cover crops into his soil management plan. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Nicole Irwin.
The Ohio Valley Resource is made possible with support from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and West Virginia Public Broadcasting. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.